The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
And now, nationally recognized financial experts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean Advisors. It's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you are here with us on this weekend day. Both myself and my financial advisor, actually, it may not be weekend. You might be listening to it on the podcast that you got from moneymatters.com, but
it could be.
This is a weekend day, for us right now.
So I was out getting the mail.
Let me bring the show
on. I was going to talk about podcast.
Let's get the show lined up. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters, both myself and my co-host here. We are both financial advisors. We spend our weekdays working with people like yourself. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And this program covers all things financial. We talk about things such as planning your retirement, your kids' education, how to have risk mitigation with your finances through insurance or other forms of doing so, how to get the house paid off if that's your objective, whatever the case is financially, to your taxes, to estate planning, all those things financially. That's what this program is. We take calls. We answer your questions. We talk about the things going on in the world. We talk about things that might pertain to you, and we talk about...
That was a beautiful introduction,
thank
Scott.
You, sir.
Let's give the phone number out. 888-2-HANSON.
I don't know why you do that.
888-2-HANSON.
We're going to talk about something at the mailbox. 888, if you want to join the program, 888-2-HANSON. Again, 888-2-HANSON to be part of the program. Or you can call 916 area codes, 921-1530. To join the show.
So I was talking about podcasts. I was getting the mail the other day, and the mail person was listening. what are you laughing about?
The mail person.
The mail person.
Politically correct. There.
I'm all about the politically correct. The mail person was listening, and then I realized I've never...
Listening to what?
They had
radio
headsets.
Program?
No, I don't know if there are a radio program, but they had headset on, or, you know, little buds, earbuds, and I thought, I started paying attention, and that male person I saw had for the next week, everyone had them. And I'm thinking, you know, if I was a male person, I'd be listening to podcasts all day long.
You started doing your own little research project.
Yeah, a little observation. Pay attention.
Maybe you should ask. It's books on tape.
It could be.
Maybe it's college courses.
Maybe I should actually go up and I'll have business cards printed up that say moneymatters.com. Listen to my podcast.
Yes.
It's a whole undiscovered niche that Hanson McLean could get male people.
You're onto something right there.
I know.
We hadn't thought about marketing to those mail carriers.
That's the right answer.
It's a mail carrier.
Anyway, so listen to the podcast.
Yeah, moneymatters.com. You can get our podcast if you so... desire to. So anyway, we got a great program lined up for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about 401k loans and we're not huge fans of them, but you'll see why when we talk about them. It's amazing how many people have them. We'll talk about 401k loans and also talk about some ways to check out your financial advisor to see.
Which is extremely important.
Yeah, to see what kind of background. And of course, we'll take your calls and... Sometimes we just talk about random things such as mail carriers listening to
us. We'd rather talk to you, though.
than
each other.
Huh?
I'd rather talk to them than to each other. We talk to each other all the time.
Who's them? The mail carriers?
The callers. The listeners.
You know, I think being a mail carrier would be a tough job. I've talked to some mail carriers.
And did they say it's a tough
job?
Yes,
it tends to be a grind after a while.
Because of the
same thing.
The sun, the storm.
The dogs.
There are no dogs anymore. Most mail carriers go up to those boxes.
I suppose it depends your route. What if you got a route? You go in the older neighborhoods and they got the mailboxes right out in the street or up at the door, a house I grew up in.
They did.
He would come walk up to the front door.
Every day.
Put the mail right in the front, through the front door.
I always looked at that, even as a kid, thinking there's got to be a better way to do it than that.
It's called email.
Well, that hadn't been invented yet. I hadn't been working on that yet.
Had you thought of that, Pat?
Yes.
It's like those guys, I wish I would have thought about that. I look at it thinking, well, number one, you didn't. Number two, if you did, you wouldn't have done anything with it.
Actually, my mom always used to say, we should have bought, you know, when driving down the road, when you know, 20 years ago, this is a vacant lot. Look at this grocery store. We should have bought that land 20 years ago. And I'm like, Mom.
We were broke 20 years ago.
We didn't have any money then.
Wow. That lakefront house in Tahoe only $48,000 back in 1938. That's incredible. Why didn't we family buy that?
The difference to us would have been $48,000, $48 million. It made no difference.
Yeah.
Anyway. Let's do that.
Anyway, to join the program.
888-2-HANSEN.
Yeah, that's right. And let's talk to Kevin. Kevin, you're with Hanson McLean.
Well, hi there. Good morning. I've got a situation where I know the other person that I'm meeting, this is going to be possible remarriage, either doesn't have very much or she's in debt.
Okay.
And the question is, when you have some savings, because, you know, if this is a second marriage, then you may have some retirement funds, you may have some real property. How do you broach the subject of financial
disclosure? Kevin, didn't your mother tell you it's just as easy to fall in love with a rich girl as a poor one? I'm joking.
So
that wasn't funny either, apparently.
No, my grandmother used to say that to me all the time. And I didn't listen. Kevin, what you're asking is, you're asking about separate property. That's your question.
And also separate debt, because you often don't know what she's coming in with.
Have you had this discussion?
Not yet.
Okay.
So are you asking us what to do or how to have the discussion?
Both. And also, what's been your experience with clients?
That's a good, okay. You know what, Kevin? This is an important question because a lot of people are, this is the exact thing they deal with, right?
And we see it fairly often.
First marriage, you're usually both broke, right? As you're young, neither one of you have anything. It doesn't much matter unless you came from some wealthy family. Typically, first marriage, you're both broke or pretty much broke. But it's the second marriage that, and this is not uncommon at all, where one person has some assets, the other one doesn't have much in the way of assets, or what they do have, it might be negative because of some debt. And having some conversation, money is one of the top things that people argue about, married people argue about. And it's one of the top things that people end up getting divorced over. They can't have some agreement, and they come up with rules as a couple, and there's one person or both don't abide by the rules, and they keep spending even though they've agreed not to, and it creates this tremendous stress in a marriage.
You have to have the conversation.
I mean, you know, it's funny. So my wife and I actually do we do like a volunteer pre-marriage counseling. We do a several week program, and we'd spend a couple weeks on nothing but financial matters.
How often do you do that?
A couple times a year. We'll do a couple couples a year. Really? It's good. It's good for our own marriage too, actually. But
you have to have the conversation because
and you have some concern here.
Yes.
You need to have that conversation with that person as well.
Because it could be. Let's say she comes into the marriage with $100,000 in credit card debt. How would you feel about that?
It now becomes your debt.
It may not become your debt, but it certainly becomes partially your responsibility. Because in most marriages, while the asset and debt are kept separate, the income is commingled in most marriages. Or responsibility is given to...
community property, it does become income.
Yeah, but you'll see it, Scott, where someone will say, okay, my job is to pay for the car payments and her job is pay for the house or whatever. The problem is that you have no idea if this is $10,000 or $100,000, correct?
Yes, and nowadays with all this stuff online, you don't even see statements.
Yeah. So,
So here's one way, Kevin. You've just had a conversation with a financial advisor. This financial advisor said you cannot go any further in this relationship until you have a conversation about the finances. So I'm the bad guy now, not you, okay? But it's really important that you just at least figure out everything that's going on. If as you're moving towards marriage, you can set up a living trust, and through that living trust process, accomplish the same sort of things that you would get out of a prenup without it being called a prenup. There's a process to go through that with a good estate planner.
That's actually not a bad idea, Scott, is to actually visit an estate planning attorney prior to marriage and say, we're going to do this, and then everything is disclosed, assets and liabilities.
Are you engaged yet?
Oh, no, no. What I'm trying to find out from you guys, Pat, Scott, is have you had any success with clients getting down this path without them now becoming polarized, because she probably doesn't have the assets he does, right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
As long as you love her more than you love your money.
Yeah, all the time. We see it all the time. But but the more open the communication, the better the relationship, obviously. And even when it comes to debt, when you bring it into the marriage.
Yeah. And it's not, you can get past this. We've seen it. You can get past this. It's the communication regarding the money that is the big issue. Glad you called, Kevin. We need to take a break. You're listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Are you questioning if the advice you receive from your stockbroker or financial advisor is best for you? If so, run it by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Simply visit their website at moneymatters.com or call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Are you as confident as you should be when it comes to your finances? Do you feel that you're on track to accomplish your goals? If not, you owe it to yourself to take a look at Hanson McLean Advisors. Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, hosts of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, founded Hanson McLean Advisors over 20 years ago to help people make wise choices with their money. The approach taken by Hanson McLean Advisors is one of financial planning, meaning the advisors take the time with each client to help map out a strategy before they offer any solutions. Their fee-based investment accounts are designed to be transparent and liquid, so you never have to guess what's going on under the hood. And there are no commissions when products are changed or when rebalances take place. Plus, unlike many investment firms, there is a high level of communication keeping you informed and up to date. With offices in Northern California, come and see how Hanson McLean Advisors can be of benefit to you. Contact them at 1-888-2-HANSON or moneymatters.com. That's moneymatters.com.
Want more advice on financial matters? Check out moneymatters.com, where you'll find information ranging from retirement to taxes to insurance to investments, all on moneymatters.com. And now, back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, and if you want to be part of the show, question for us, you'd like to have us answer on the air, call us at 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON. Of course, if you're a longtime listener out of Sacramento, where we've been broadcasting for 20 years prior to going on KGO, 921-1530 will get you on the air. And, of course, KGO listeners would love to hear from you as well, 888-2-HANSON.
So,
Before we go back, we're going to grab Steve here in a second. But
I wanted to talk about the call on the last.
Because it's a big issue.
So here's Kevin. He's thinking about getting married. He's got some suspicions that there is some debt there. He knows that there's really no assets. That part has been disclosed. The biggest problem in this situation is how the debt was acquired. Was it acquired on a systematic basis? Is it consistent that someone overspends and isn't afraid of debt, actually uses debt, debt's part of their life, doesn't bother them at all? Or was it a one-time event that gets you in debt? Was there a death in the family or a major automobile repair? And how big is the debt?
And oftentimes divorces, you could take people that have pretty good financial assets. By the time a divorce is through,
they have debt.
And you'll see a spouse sometimes will start spending a lot in the middle of a divorce as a way to try to
hurt
cope
someone.
With it.
Yeah, to hurt the, it's the spending wars. I've seen that before.
Well, you might want to learn that about the person as well.
So the situation here is you've got to understand how the debt was acquired. Not only how much is the debt, but how the debt was acquired. Because if the person consistently, and we've seen this, when people actually acquire debt, and every 7 or 10 years they file for bankruptcy and it's discharged, and then they do it again, that may be something that is a deal breaker in a relationship. I know for me personally, it would drive me crazy if my spouse spent money recklessly and was in debt.
You know, it's funny. It's
wouldn't it do you? Wouldn't it bother you, Scott?
Well, of course it would.
It would drive me nuts.
And when we choose to get married to somebody, we are marrying another person, another human being that have strengths and weaknesses. They have their own flaws and shortcomings, right? And you learn to live with those. I'm sure my wife's got a very short list of mine. I mean, there's.
Yeah, no. Well, I asked my wife, and she couldn't even think of one.
But I mean, there's certain things, right? That's just it's human nature. That's just it, and it is important that you understand this person that you're falling in love with, how they interact with money. Not that money is the most important thing in life. It's clearly not. But if money managed improperly and poorly can be disastrous on someone's life, can wreak havoc. If you've got creditors calling you all the time and your bank account suddenly gets depleted by the IRS because you haven't been paying your taxes, your life can be a mess.
And if you marry into that not knowing it, that's just ignorance.
And, you know, I actually think that I really think that part of our wiring when we're born dictates a lot of how we are with money. There are those that are great. And if you've got a number of kids, you've seen it. There are those that are great savers. They'll save money. They enjoy saving. When my son was young, he would get a gift certificate at Toys R Us. I remember going to Toys R Us for an hour and he couldn't find any. He wanted to go home with his money. My daughter, complete opposite, still the same, right? And it's as financial advisors, we've seen, it seems to me, the best situation is we take someone who's a great saver and someone who's a spender, not a reckless spender, but someone who's maybe not that great at saving, and those two combine, because sometimes we've seen people that they're such great savers that they never actually enjoy the money. It's they're saving for the security that really probably never going to come from the money anyway. And then you've got the spender that doesn't know how to save. When you can combine the two, I really think that's sometimes where you get some of the best solutions from it all. So anyway, enough about that topic. 888-2-HANSEN to join the program. It is a big issue.
Yeah, I wonder if there's some sort of application that we should come up with on like a check my future wife or future husband's credit.com.
Yeah, that'll go good, yeah. Before you say I do.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, it'd be great. That's just the kind of area I want to spend my time too. 888-2-HANSEN to join the program. We're talking with Steve. Steve, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi there. My wife is 59 years old, and she's 10 years older than I am, and she's considering taking Social Security at age 62. I believe it's about $500 a month is all it will be. Can she take draw off my future Social Security, and if so, what impact would that have to my Social Security when I'm of age?
Well, you're 49?
Right.
Okay. Well, first off, if I were a betting man, I would bet that by the time you reach age Social Security eligibility, there will be some things that have changed.
So what we're going to answer the question now is based on the rules today, but 13 years out, the likelihood that this still applies is probably very, very
and
small.
Frankly, the further someone is away from Social Security, the less we plan for it during the retirement. Not to say that we don't believe it's going to be there, because we believe Social Security will continue to be there, but we believe there'll be some changes, and you're best off trying to plan for your retirement. If you can get to retirement and you don't need Social Security, that's a great place to be. So that's the kind of the planning
so
we have.
But your question is, if she starts at 62, will it affect your
none? So
zero.
For a spouse is entitled to receive the greater of their own benefit or 50% of their spouse's normal retirement benefit. Your normal retirement benefit would be at age 67, I believe, being 49 years old. So if she starts at age 62, she wouldn't technically get 50% of your benefit because she started early. So she couldn't maximize the amount she'd receive as a spouse because she started early. Having said that, it wouldn't have any impact whatsoever on your own Social Security.
And if you go to, we have an educational website called moneymatters.com. Didn't you do a Social Security webinar a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
Go to moneymatters.com.
It'll highlight some of the rules behind. Or don't. You're 49 or not worry about it that much at this point.
we want them to go to our website.
Oh.
That's what the marketing department said. Get people to go to the website. Apparently it's supposed to be good. So if you go to the website, moneymatters.com.
But it wouldn't have any bearing. If you're concerned about, would this have any bearing on your Social Security? Zero. None whatsoever.
Okay, good. Yeah, all right. That's good to hear.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
But nonetheless, go to moneymatters.com and just peruse the website. We've put a lot of time and energy into this. And
so is it an obvious decision then if 50% of my Social Security benefit at age 67, even if she takes it at 62, exceeds $500. Is it then
just
a no-brainer that she might as well take it since it's higher than 500?
Correct. But we're talking how many years out? 17, 18 years?
Well, 3 for her, right?
Yeah.
She's 10 years older than I am. So
is she not working?
The decision would be it. She worked for a number of years, but that's why it'd only be $500.
But she's not working now.
At 62. She's not working now.
The only thing to see is, she wouldn't get a spousal benefit until you start claiming yours.
Yeah, so it doesn't even matter.
So she wouldn't get it at 62.
She doesn't have. She doesn't get a spousal benefit. She just hers.
Yeah,
because of you're not Social Security eligible.
I see. So I would have to be Social Security eligible for her to get it. So it wouldn't be till 70
more than eligible. You'd have to have claimed Social Security.
Yeah, you had to be of normal retirement age, so 67. You have to file and then suspend if you didn't want to take it, where she would get 50% of yours. So that's you're asking a question that's 18 years in the future.
The question really is today, though, right, Steve? Is should your wife take Social Security at age 62
versus waiting
or wait? So the question really is, what's the overall financial situation in the house like? And if she waited till age 70, would those additional dollars make a big impact on your retirement, her retirement?
Right. Do you need the $500 a month in income now?
No, not now.
Well, then I wouldn't take it. Unless she had health problems that you think would shorten her life expectancy.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you don't need the money,
I wouldn't take it.
I don't take it. Just wait. Unless she has a health problem that would shorten her life expectancy.
Okay.
All righty. And then rest of it, we can't even speculate what Social Security will look like.
We can speculate, but that's another show entirely. Anyway.
I wouldn't even speculate what it's going to look like in 18 years for the average American. I could. But I wouldn't.
And I won't. I just won't go there.
I can't even imagine. I have no idea what Social Security is going to look like to the average person in 18 years.
Well, we do know this.
It's probably not getting.
1950, there were 10 people working for every one person collecting benefits. Today, there's about 2 people working for every one person collecting benefits. The system is not sustainable in its current form. You can only tax young workers so much. As we have more baby boomers marching into retirement, it is becoming stressed and strained, and I think
the third rail.
The latest thing I looked at, it was by 2030 it'll be insolvent. That's there was years ago. That was a long time off. It's 15 years. It's not that long off. So you're 49 years old trying to plan for it. Your normal retirement age is 67. The Social Security fund is going to be it's going to require more in revenues from the taxpayers. To make the thing sustainable. So it is the third rail.
In politics, it's the third rail.
And no one really wants to address it. But we've certainly had some, we've seen from some, there has been a couple politicians, though, lately that have come out and said.
They're trying. I mean, even Chris Christie came out and said, you know, we got to change this.
Chris Christie came out a while back and said there should be means testing.
Yes. Yes.
Kind of a rule of thumb that we have. If you've done a phenomenal job saving, investing, and you hit retirement age and you've got a lot of money, plenty of assets, plenty of income, take it as soon as you can get it.
And why do you take it as soon as you can get it?
Because
you're the one that they're not going to pay it out to in the future if they don't have to. If you have assets and you don't require the Social Security in order to live, who are they going to say, you don't get this benefit anymore, or we're going to tax more of this?
And if you're listening and thinking, oh, you guys, Hanson McClain, you guys are crazy, you don't know what we're talking about. Look, for the majority of Americans, Social Security is tax-free. But if you've got some decent income in retirement, 85% of your benefits is taxable. If you're in the top tax rate, 39.6%, the feds, California, add on top of that as well. If you're in the top tax rate, a good portion of your Social Security already is being reduced. It already is.
And not
reduced.
For everyone, just for the higher wage earners.
Yeah. So if you've done a great job.
Or earners, income earners.
Done a great job saving for retirement, and Medicare is already more expensive. And it just made it more expensive again for the wealthy people. On the other hand, if Social Security is going to make an impact on your income, and you're going to rely upon that income, you need that income, you want to wait as long as possible. And ideally, if you can wait till age 70, if you keep working till age 70, if you need that income, if retirement's tough for you, that's going to be your best
bet. And if you're in the middle of the road like Steve, put it off.
Yeah. So, hey, we're taking a quick break. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. If you'd like to join the program, we got a question for us. It's 888-2-HANSON, 888-2-H-A-N-S-O-N. When we come back, we're going to talk about 401k loans. This is Hanson McLean.
Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it's retirement readiness or investment allocation, tax planning or IRA rollovers, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, simply visit their website at moneymatters.com or call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
You hear Scott Hanson and Pat McLean each weekend as they host Hanson McLean's Money Matters. And if you're not yet a client of Hanson McLean Advisors, you really ought to give them a shot. You see, the same type of straightforward financial advice that is provided during the show is what the clients of Hanson McLean Advisors receive on a regular basis. The approach of Hanson McLean Advisors is to first listen to you and then help come up with a plan to provide a greater chance of success in achieving your financial goals. Goals that range from retirement planning to debt elimination to income solutions. Hanson McLean Advisors is not simply a store that sells one type of product. No, Hanson McLean Advisors is an independent advisory firm that pick from a wide variety of financial products. They use investment tools from well-known brand names, in addition to financial products from lesser-known boutique shops, all with the objective to help you meet your financial goals. So if you have yet to see how the commission-free programs of Hanson McLean Advisors can benefit you, contact them today at 1-888-2-HANSON or visit them at moneymatters.com.
Get a podcast of Hanson McLean's Money Matters delivered each week to your computer or mobile device. Simply visit moneymatters.com. And now, back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, glad you are here. So we're talking about financial matters. That's what we do. It's what we enjoy. I guess it's what we enjoy.
I do.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
20-some-odd years on this business, talking about certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant.
Actually, big deal. We work with people like yourself.
That's a big deal?
Who cares about it? Well, maybe you should care whether you're CFP or CHFC.
Yeah, that is a big deal.
Because most in our industry are not. But we work with people like yourself, so they're real world. It's not academic. In fact, we have an internship program. I shouldn't say this on the air because they're going to flood us with. We have an intern.
Then don't.
We have an internship program at our company where we work with college students that are studying
certified financial
to be
program.
Certified financial planners. And I sat down with one and was working on a case, and I thought, holy smokes, the difference between real world and academia in terms of, because I was asking them questions and they were right out of the textbook, and I thought I was like that not too long ago.
Well, I think the one of the things that's made this program successful over the last 20 years that we've been airing out of Northern California is the fact that we are practicing financial plan. We are financial advisors.
We meet with people like yourself.
So we are in
it's
the.
It's not theoretical.
Yeah, it's not theoretical. It's not just academic, which is nothing wrong.
You know, actually, and everything works perfectly until you involve people.
I had dinner last night, and we'll go back to the calls here because I know Carrie's waiting and others, and we're also going to talk about 401ks. But I had dinner last night with one of my nephews. I have one sister with 9 kids, so I've got lots of nieces and nephews.
In a giant shoe.
They do, yes. How did you know?
9 kids.
He's in this dinner with my nephew and his fiance. They're both students at UC Davis in the graduate program, and they're PhD. They're a PhD student.
Really?
Of some sorts. Yes. He's been in college 10 years.
How old is he? 28?
28.
Really?
That's what I assume. This is his 10th year, and they're both about to get their.
Wow. That's impressive.
Why am I bringing this up? Because, well, we're talking about education. But he says, here's what's kind of funny, he says to me. And he's always, of course, he's He's always been on the liberal side of things because that's what you do when you're in college. And he's at Davis and all that. And he says to me, yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting a job and making some money.
Did he?
I'm looking forward to getting a real job and making some money.
What's he studying?
I don't know. PhDs. He's a PhD. Yeah,
well, that's just, they normally have an area of emphasis.
Doctor. I'm just going to call him Doctor.
Is he studying, is it finance or is it?
It's
microbiology or?
Global political structures. Oh. He either goes to work for the State Department or he goes to, he's created some algorithm thing on, he's actually.
He sounds brilliant.
He actually is quite brilliant, but I don't know why we're talking about this.
Well, let's take some calls. 888-2-HANSON.
All right.
HANSON.
We're talking with Carrie. Carrie, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. I love your show.
Oh, thank you
for taking my call. I have a question about thinking about investing in a vehicle from Lincoln Financial.
Okay.
It's a long-term care/life insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called MoneyGuard. So I would invest $100,000 over 3 years. And this is for my husband.
Okay.
And we have a second-to-die policy. So we already have a life insurance policy in place. But this is a second.
You have a second-to-die, not a first-to-die.
Not a first-to-die.
And is that inside of an irrevocable life insurance trust?
Yes.
Okay.
What's the size of your estate ballpark?
Probably $4 million.
Okay. And how long ago did you buy the second to die life insurance policy?
Oh, when my children were small, 92.
What's the death benefit on that?
$250,000.
Okay. And how much cash is in that today?
I think $40,000 or so.
Okay.
And how old are you?
I'm 63.
And how old's your husband?
65.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, continue on. Sorry. Not very often do you talk to someone who's got a second-to-die life insurance policy.
Especially when...
That's looking at long-term care insurance.
Especially when it was purchased so many years ago.
We bought that as to protect the estate.
Yes, for taxes.
Yes,
correct.
Okay, so your question is, you're looking at this policy from a large life insurance company that is a life insurance policy and a long-term care policy?
Correct.
And your estate's worth $4 million?
Yes.
And how much of that is liquid versus illiquid, like land or real estate?
Land, mostly land.
Okay.
And how much, if you put $100,000 into this, how much long-term care benefit, what's the maximum benefit that would come out should something...
If he needed it today,
correct.
$5,100 a month.
For how long?
For 6 years.
All right.
Really?
$5,100 a month for 6 years.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I actually question that.
That doesn't look bad to me.
No, there's nothing wrong with it at all. It looks too good.
We both look at each other. Well, that's not a bad deal.
Because that's $360,000 in benefit for a $100,000 invest. I question that.
Well, if it's accurate, it might not
the
be a bad...
The benefit is $124,000.
Unless you use that benefit up in long-term care.
Right.
But she wants it for
the
long.
That would go away if you
correct
long-term care.
If that's, in fact, I got to tell you, I'm going to do, if that
that's
is
not,
in fact true, I'm actually going to do some research after the show. I don't believe it.
Long-term care benefit, $373,000.
What's the catch?
$373,000.
That's right. I mean, it pays
for
6 years. What's the catch? How does the insurance company do this?
Well, he's medically underwritten. He's 65, and they know they're not going to need it for a number of years.
The death benefit is $124,000.
Is this guaranteed?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad. I don't think it's a bad product.
If it is how you describe it, I think it's great.
Okay.
But my question is, I'm going to do some research on this because I don't understand how the insurance company could actually do it and make money.
Well, they don't always make money on your products. You understand that.
They try. They don't price anything not to make money.
Yeah, their objective is to make money.
Yeah, everything that is priced. So what they're using is a morbidity and mortality table and an assumed rate of return. And why would you wait 3 years to put the money in? Why wouldn't you just put it in immediately?
Well, this one happens to be a graded $33,000 each year for 3 years. It just lessens our impact.
You know, why don't you? Why wouldn't you consider taking that money out of that second to die policy?
That's what I was thinking.
And I don't think you'd be able to do a tax-free exchange with that.
Because there's two insureds. You may be able to.
There's two insureds there. But you don't need that second-to-die policy anymore. And it's got $40,000 in it.
Yeah. Yep.
And my guess is you could probably pull that out with... I'm guessing you don't have a lot of gain, if any, in that policy.
Probably no taxes.
So there's no taxes. I would look at getting rid of that second-to-die policy and taking that money and purchasing this. And why is it just on your husband and not you?
Well, that's because most likely he's the one that's going to, not to say that he's going to expire first, but he has a long history of Alzheimer's dementia in his family.
Okay.
And you'll feel more, you'll feel, part about this, you'll feel good about this, right?
Yeah. I'm a nurse. I see people come in and they have nothing in place. For long-term care, and it's expensive after the 90
expensive.
Days.
Yeah, so if, in fact, this product is as you describe it, I think it's great.
Yeah.
And I would use the money from the second-to-die policy.
I would agree with Pat there.
And why would I liquidate that second-to-die
policy? Because you don't have an estate tax problem, because the estate taxes with the trust are up to $10 million now. You don't have an estate tax problem, and the kids will inherit plenty of money. Your estate's worth $4 million. It's outlived the purpose. The reason you bought it was for estate taxes, and the rules have changed.
Well, that's assuming that estate taxes remain the same for the next 20 years.
But we can only... Correct. But you said that it was kind of a stretch funding, this policy, the new life insurance policy. We have the answer right there.
No, I can do this.
Oh, okay. You can?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can do this over 3 years, $33,000. This is okay.
Okay.
Still work.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, then you should do it. I think it'd be fine.
And I should leave the other one alone?
You can. I'd question whether I would leave it alone or not.
You wouldn't buy it today.
I don't know if it's got enough cash in it to be sustainable either.
Yeah. But hey, we're out of time.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank
Terry.
You for the answer.
Absolutely. And I think that if that's like you said, it's what it is. Hey, we got to take a quick break to join the show. 888-2-HANSON. Again, 888-2-HANSON. You're listening to Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
Taking the financially complex and making it simple. It's Hanson McClain's Money Matters at 1-888-2-HANSON.
Are you as confident as you should be when it comes to your finances? Do you feel that you're on track to accomplish your goals? If not, you owe it to yourself to take a look at Hanson McClain Advisors. Scott Hanson and Pat McClain, hosts of Hanson McClain's Money Matters, founded Hanson McClain Advisors over 20 years ago to help people make wise choices with their money. The approach taken by Hanson McClain Advisors is one of financial planning, meaning the advisors take the time with each client to help map out a strategy before they offer any solutions. Their fee-based investment accounts are designed to be transparent and liquid, so you never have to guess what's going on under the hood. And there are no commissions when products are changed or when rebalances take place. Plus, unlike many investment firms, there is a high level of communication keeping you informed and up to date. With offices in Northern California, come and see how Hanson McClain Advisors can be of benefit to you. Contact them at 1-888-2-HANSON or moneymatters.com. That's moneymatters.com.
Back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Two guys, one head of hair.
Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McClain.
Yeah.
I want to, if you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSON.
I'm going to talk about 401ks, like I said.
I'd like to revisit quickly with Carrie's question about this life insurance policy. She said, well, I've got this life insurance policy, second to die for $250,000, has $40,000 in cash in it.
And second to die means, just like it sounds, it'll pay a death benefit when the second person passes away.
And they're typically held in irrevocable life insurance trust for estate tax planning.
You don't see them much anymore because after the estate laws changed years ago, that it was a lot of middle class people were hit with estate taxes when the estate tax limits were $600,000 each. A lot of very middle class people. Today it's over $5 million each. You get a couple can pass on almost $11 million.
I don't remember the last time I saw one. So the typical person doesn't need one anymore. So her question was, well, why wouldn't I continue to own it? The way life insurance policy work is that they have assumed rates of return and deposits, and you're paying premiums, and not all of it goes into the cash portion of it. $40,000 at a $250,000 life insurance policy, I would look at that and ask the insurance company to do what's called a midstream projection to see if it was going to run out of cash at some point in time. My guess, it would.
Because particularly if it was set up in the early 90s when rates were different back then.
Yes.
And a lot of these assumptions weren't.
Carrie actually, what she needs is a financial advisor she can trust that would actually address that issue.
And long-term care is one of those funny things. Unfortunately, the insurance is typically so expensive that those who need it really can't afford it. I mean, I hate to say it.
And if you don't need it, you don't buy it.
If you have several million dollars, you can say, I'm not going to bother with the insurance. I'll just self-insure. And that's what a lot of people do with those kind of assets. And if you don't have any assets, you think, well, I don't have any money anyway. So.
And what type of assets? And in Carrie's question was, is most of their assets is tied up in land.
Yeah, so. Anyway, hey, I want to do 888-2-HANSON to join the program, 888-2-HANSON.
Or you can go to moneymatters.com and you can actually type in a question there.
That's right. Hey, on 401ks, the majority of companies allow their employees to borrow against their 401ks, right? It turns out that 26% of people, roughly one of four individuals with a 401k, has an outstanding loan on it.
Really?
Yes.
26%?
Yes. Of 401ks.
I should know this.
Well, not really.
Yeah. I think you'd be...
You shouldn't. You don't. The reason you don't know that is because you are not an advocate of 401k loans. You say that they are not healthy for you financially.
For most people, they are not.
And here's the problem. Here's why we don't like 401ks. First of all, 401k loans. You can take a loan. You can borrow half your account balance to a maximum of $50,000. That rule hasn't changed since I entered the business 25 years ago. Whatever. $50,000 is the maximum you can borrow. It's half up to 50% of your account balance. Now. The challenge with these loans, and some people say, oh, they're good because the interest you're paying is going back into your own account, so you're paying yourself. The problem is a couple things. First of all, when you're taking a loan, you're missing out on an opportunity for your own dollars to be there working for you. So when you take a loan, let's say your account balance is $25,000.
And you borrow $12,000 out.
You only have $13,000 working for you. It's not like a margin loan would work on a security or a real estate loan would work on a home. On a real estate loan on a home, the home value is still there. All the home's there.
In a 401k, they liquidate that position and give you the money.
Correct. So you're missing out on that opportunity. So that interest you think you're paying to yourself, well, you would have been earning interest anyway that you're no longer earning.
If you separate employment.
This is the biggie here.
It becomes a taxable event to you with all taxes and penalties due.
Yeah, so you're at your job. You get a job offer across town, better job. You think, oh, I'm going to go do that. If you can't pay your loan back.
Is it 30 days or 60 days?
It depends. There's some companies up to, every company's different. I've seen up to a year, but the loan needs to be repaid. If you can't repay the loan, it becomes due and taxable to you with penalties. You lose your job. Your company goes through downsizing. Not only are you now out of work,
you've got a tax bill.
A 401k loan you can't pay back, you've got a tax bill.
And most people never pay them back if they separate from employment, which is why they took the loan in the first place, is they didn't have the money.
So anyway, it's we're not big fans of 401k loans. Last resort.
And I had no idea it was 26%.
One out of four.
I bet the average balance that they owe isn't that big.
Well, the average, it probably tend to be smaller. Yeah. I mean, you don't come across them on a daily basis because you're working with people as they're planning for retirement, and
they are
usually
planning
don't
for retirement.
Yeah, you,
yeah. People that come to our office typically don't come in.
So I'm planning on retiring in 2 years. Oh, I have. By the way, I have nothing, and I've got maxed out on my credit cards.
How's that going
to
work?
All right, let's go to the calls here. 888-2-HANSEN. We're talking with Chuck. Chuck, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, Pat and Scott have been listening to you for years, and I can tell you people would pay a lot of money for the advice you give freely each week.
Well, thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate it.
Wow, appreciate that.
Question I have is, I hear a lot of advertisements for solar panels being put on your roof, and I know they're not cheap. But the thing I never hear them talk about, calculating into the cost, is the fact that it probably raises the assessed value of your home, correct?
Yeah, actually, I have heard that recently. Oh, not assessed value of the home. I actually don't know
it's
how.
It's an improvement. Yeah, of course. If you put $50,000.
Does that affect your property tax?
I actually don't know if there's an exemption for solar or not.
Yeah.
I've never heard.
I'm trying to remember what happened with mine when we put it on.
I have solar. I certainly didn't notice any major change in my tax.
And when did it? We were in the middle of a remodel.
But just because the government doesn't tell you doesn't mean it happens, you know?
Oh, we get that.
I mean, it's an improvement.
I don't know if there's an exemption
supposed
for
to report
solar.
Those improvements, and it will impact
When I put my swimming pool in,
of course,
it affected my property.
Yep, needed the permit.
I get that, but I don't know if there's an exemption for solar. I have no idea. I imagine there may be.
So, you know,
but I think it'd be worth looking into.
Chuck, you know how you started and you said you love that you've been listening to the program and people would pay for the advice we give out free? Not for this advice.
No, this is bad.
Because we didn't.
Actually, we don't know the answer.
I don't know the answer.
You're right.
So what is your question for us, Chuck?
Yeah, that was the question, whether or not it would affect my property tax values.
I don't know. I have no we'll check. We'll check. You can Google it.
You know what? I never thought of that.
No,
I don't think there is an exemption, but it wouldn't surprise me. And I bet it's county by county.
Yeah.
I'll bet it is, too.
Yeah, and when you buy solar, I think, actually, solar for many people makes sense, especially if you're on the top tiers for electricity usage. So I have 4 kids at home. We hit the top tier almost every month, regardless of how many times I actually walk around the house turning all the lights off.
My electricity now is only about 1/3 of what it used to be when I had 4 children living at home.
See?
Oh, I've been all the more reasons to get
bragging,
my kids out of there.
Bragging.
Hey, Chuck, appreciate the call.
Okay, thanks, guys.
The weekend.
He's bragging about his kids leaving the house?
I thought we were going to have a different question.
So did I. When the notes were, but.
bragging about the kids leaving. And at the beginning of the program, sorry, we're not going to take more calls right now, even though we appreciate you calling.
Because we said we were going to talk about something, and we need to.
888-2-HANSEN, and we'll get you on next week. FINRA, which is a regulatory quasi-governmental agency that regulates the financial service industry, has recently put out a bunch of commercials. You might have seen these or heard these commercials on how to check out your broker by broker check. They have this big ad campaign they've come out with, which I thought was kind of bizarre. But the ad campaign, it's the fact that they're doing the ad campaign, not the ads themselves. Some of them are kind of clever, actually, but just an interesting way to be spending their dollars. But the fact is, there is a database that they keep on every financial advisor who is or has ever been registered with the securities industry. What I mean by that, someone who's ever had a license to sell securities, they have a background check that you can do.
And you could look to see if they've had any infractions against them or bankruptcies or job history or how often they've moved around from company to company.
It's called Broker Check. If you just simply Google Broker Check, it'll take you right to the website. You enter the person's name. If you know what firm they work for, you can enter that. If you don't, then don't.
Their city that they're working, they're easy to find.
Really easy to find. It will tell you how long they've been licensed. Have there been customer complaints? Are there outstanding customer complaints?
How were they resolved?
Have they had any sanctions against them or fines levied against them? Have they, on and on. And a couple Here's why I know most people don't use this. I know some financial advisors in Northern California who filed bankruptcy that you can see on there. Not that there's, it happens to good people. I'm not saying that the advisor's not a good, but someone who's out talking about how their diversified portfolios will help them survive a downturn, but yet themselves
didn't survive a downturn.
Didn't survive a downturn. Don't know if, anyway.
It might not be consistent.
You might want to know that going in. I've seen other financial advisors who have been barred from the industry for a number of years back there. Maybe.
Sanctioned by the industry or fined by the industry. Not a customer complaint, but fined by the industry. There's a difference between the two. You might have a customer complaint, which is one thing, and it could be resolved. But if the industry is fining you, yeah, a little murky.
Yeah. So if you are, you can do it on your existing advisor you're working with.
And you should.
Or if someone's, you're thinking about going and visiting somebody new.
Before you go and visit.
Before.
Before you go and visit them.
Do a little back.
That's what it's there for.
It takes you a couple minutes.
I use them.
It's called broker check. We use it before we hire people.
Yeah, absolutely.
We look at their background.
Actually, someone comes in from another with another advisor, you look, and they say, oh, this is the advisor I use. You look into the advisor they use.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, just simply Google broker check, and you'll find out more about that. So, hey, we are running out of time, unfortunately. Hanson McLean broadcasts every weekend. We're out of KFBK Sacramento on Saturdays 10 to 11. Broadcast at KGO in the Bay Area, Saturdays 4 to 5. And, of course, you can always get our podcast by just simply visiting moneymatters.com. At Money Matters, you can sign up for that. And at Money Matters, there's all kinds of other great information there for you as well. So, anyway, we're out of time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. You've been listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.
You hear Scott Hanson and Pat McLean each weekend as they host Hanson McLean's Money Matters. And if you're not yet a client of Hanson McLean Advisors, you really ought to give them a shot. You see, the same type of straightforward financial advice that is provided during the show is what the clients of Hanson McLean Advisors receive on a regular basis. The approach of Hanson McLean Advisors is to first listen to you and then help come up with a plan to provide a greater chance of success in achieving your financial goals. Goals that range from retirement planning to debt elimination to income solutions. Hanson McLean Advisors is not simply a store that sells one type of product. No, Hanson McLean Advisors is an independent advisory firm that picks from a wide variety of financial products. They use investment tools from well-known brand names, in addition to financial products from lesser-known boutique shops, all with the objective to help you meet your financial goals. So if you have yet to see how the commission-free programs of Hanson McLean Advisors can benefit you, contact them today at 1-888-2-HANSON or visit them at moneymatters.com.